Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll free, 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I am Cy Kellett, your host, and we are having a better Wednesday than you should be allowed to have. We just had a great hour with Father Hugh Barber. This hour, we talk about the media and faith. And, you know, let's just examine that for a moment. When you consider that we see this rise of a kind of de-Christianization and a people identifying themselves as not religiously affiliated and all that, what does that correspond with almost exactly? Does it have anything to do with the rise of mass media over the course of the last 30, 40, 50 years? It certainly seems to. I don't think that other aspects of our culture have changed or brought change quite so much. When we think about it that way, we really are forced, we are compelled to start asking ourselves about the role of media in undermining and damaging faith. And is there a role for media in the life of a Christian faithful person, a child, an adolescent, an adult? To help us answer that question, as I said, is Dr. Holly Ordway. If you have a question or comment in that regard, if you'd like to talk about media and faith, 888-318-7884 is our number, 888-31-TRUTH. Dr. Ordway is a professor of English and faculty member in the Apologetics Master's Program at Houston Baptist University. Her latest book is Apologetics in the Christian Imagination, an Integrated Approach to Defending the Faith from Emmaus Road Publishing. She's also the author of a memoir, Not God's Type, an Atheist Academic Lays Down Her Arms. Dr. Holly Ordway, thank you for being with us.
My pleasure. It's always a treat to be on Catholic Answers.
So, is it fair of me to, or have I made a correlation that is not necessarily indicating a causation that we seem to be losing our faith as a culture at the very moment where mass media is in the ascendancy? Are these things related?
I think they're related, but not in quite the direct cause and effect that we might be tempted to draw. I think that a lot of our harmful and negative responses to media are the product of the same forces that are bringing about the secularization that we see in our culture. So, for instance, our fragmentation of culture, the emphasis on individualism, so we're all kind of atomized in society. There's some of the same forces at play, and I think there's a bit of a feedback loop in certain ways. So I think it's helpful to keep that in mind, because media can be very harmful to faith, as you noted, but it can also be a great boon for us in evangelizing. And so it's both and there.
Like if you had a radio show that you also made into a TV show, that would be a good use of media, is what you're saying.
Exactly. Or if, for instance, you have designed, developed, and teach in a fully online apologetics program, for instance.
Okay. All right. So as two people who are making broad use of the media, I suppose that you're making clear to me we can't just do a broad condemnation of media, however. But you, as you said, there's a kind of a feedback loop where we are encouraged to be a certain – you use the word atomized, so this kind of individual, kind of hyper individual. I'm me, and what I want is what matters, and even my definition of reality is that's what constitutes reality. And then that gets reinforced in the television and the movies and all that. And then we get deeper into that, and it gets reinforced again. And here we are.
And I think we especially see this with social media, and that's really what I'm most interested in talking about today, because there's a lot of things you could say about film and television, but that's been covered, I think, a little bit more. The really new thing is the way that we can interact socially in things like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat. You have a dozen other platforms that, you know, we can talk about. And I think here we see the atomization having a very interesting effect, because we're so isolated that we're longing for community, we're seeking community. But the nature of the internet is such that we can then actually connect with absolutely anybody anywhere. And that can have very positive effects. That can be very, very constructive. But it also means that people can connect with other people who have very destructive impulses, like, for instance, pro-anorexia groups. there are actually groups that encourage young women to starve themselves. And this is obviously not a healthy form of community.
No, indeed. No. That's kind of shocking, as a matter of fact. But I guess in a way it's not shocking when you think that there's probably these sentiments and even kind of sick sentiments. They're always there within our community at some level. But now they can be kind of bullhorned out there via Twitter or something like that.
And they can be normalized. So it may, and I think we see this, for instance, in the promotion of homosexuality, homosexual behavior as a normal activity. It actually, and same thing with transgenderism, there are a certain number of people who struggle with homosexual impulses, and we have to help them to bear that cross. There are a certain number of people who struggle with a disjunction between their physical gender and what they perceive as their gender. But the number of people who have that issue is really a really tiny proportion of the population. But if someone is having a little bit of a confusion about, say, their gender or their sexuality, one quick look online and they can immediately plug into a network that makes it seem like this is a big thing. It's a normal thing. Look at here are all these other nice people who are having the same thing.
Right.
And so it means that it gets blown out of proportion in a sense. What's the norm? What's the healthy balance? There's no sense of that.
Right. Yeah. It's very hard to get any kind of focus because what you're focusing on is the whole world at that moment. So you don't get a sense of the context of these things, the broader context. And then I wonder if you would connect some of this to the fact that, I don't know the cause and effect here either, but they do seem related, that we're very wounded, hurt society in many ways, in large part, I think, because of the instability of family, that young people, and it doesn't just mean, my mom and dad stayed married. So, but we've all been exposed, whether it's our spouse or our friends, or we saw these things happen, aunts and uncles, and there's a sense of a kind of dissolution in that. And then people seek a kind of community in other places.
Absolutely. And I think we have to recognize that even if an individual person has a secure and stable family, the fact is that you take one look around at all the friends, the families of the friends, and you see there, but for the grace of God go I, and you don't have that sense of security. You think, well, maybe my mom and dad are still married, but maybe they'll break up later,
right.
or will I be able to have a stable marriage? Will right. I be able to have friendships? So it really affects everybody, the sense of instability. Now, there is one cause and effect that I want to draw your attention to that I think is a genuine cause and effect. There's a lot of studies that have come out lately about depression in teenagers, depression and anxiety, and this has spiked to record levels. Serious depression in young people is a really, really big problem. And there have been some recent studies that show a pretty exact trajectory from the introduction of the iPhone. Smartphones and teenage depression are so tightly linked that it's almost certainly a cause and effect phenomenon. And it actually makes a lot of sense because here you have these young people who are intensely trying to figure out what's going on in their lives, intensely aware of peer pressure and the need to look good.
Yeah.
And now you have your iPhone, you have your smartphone where you can be 24/7 connected with that peer group. So you can have that anxiety of looking good all the time. There's no break. There's no moment off. And that, I think, is one of the most toxic effects of this technology.
So would you say a parent of a, I don't know, a young teen, but not terribly young, say a 14-year-old, that if the child does have that, well, first of all, maybe you would advise them to not have a smartphone, but then it sounds like you might also, if they do indeed have a smartphone, to get them to have time off from it, not this be a 24/7 thing for them.
Yes. And I think it's vitally important to have some limits. Now, I think we ought to be prohibiting technology to kids a lot longer than people usually think. I don't think that before the age of, say, 14, nobody needs a smartphone. And I know that parents are going to be saying, but my kid wants or but this. You know, if you need to have emergency contact with your kid, get a
flip phone.
You know, and you can do that. All the other kids have them. Well, no, just be the parents. And I actually will say, I think a lot of times kids appreciate having the parents be the bad guy. Now, your daughter or son might melt down and say, but I'm going to be the only one in my group. I'm going to be the one who's left out. Well, first of all, it might be that your son or daughter is experiencing bullying and pressure that he or she may not even realize is anything other than normal. Doesn't everybody live in misery, right?
Yeah.
So they may not realize that this is going to help. Or they may realize it but not be able to be the one who stands up. Now, it's a lot easier for the kid to say, oh, I'd love to have a smartphone, but my horrible parents won't let me, versus, no, I'm going to choose to be the odd one out of my own free will. That's a lot harder for a young person to do. So even if your teenager is sort of pushing back on this, there's a lot of reasons why you want to draw that line. But let's say that you have your 14, 15-year-old and you think they're ready to have a phone, they're ready to have some of this access. First of all, use the parental lockouts, use all the things you can do to make sure that it's harder for there to be porn on the phone, because mm-hmm. that's going to happen. And make sure that phone does not go into your child's bedroom, ever.
Did you say that phone? I just missed it. So make sure the phone doesn't go into the child's bedroom.
Yes.
Got it.
Have it always in public places and have it stay outside. Have a charging station in the living room, mm-hmm. and that's where the phone stays. Because even if there's nothing horrible going on, the anxiety, teenagers need their sleep. And they will stay up into the wee hours of the morning texting, looking at how many likes their post got on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to happen, and that's going to be disruptive to their sleep. It's going to be anxiety producing. You need to let them turn the thing off, and they won't do it on their own. They won't.
No, right. Right. Maybe they can't. I mean, they may not be at a developmental stage where they can. We have to take a quick break. Dr. Holly Ordway is our guest this hour, and we're discussing media and faith and those ways in which media can be helpful to the faith, but maybe in particular focusing on those ways in which we need to be on guard with our faith when it comes to social media in particular. Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Trent Horn. Did you know that you can have me and other Catholic Answers speakers headline your next conference or parish event? Go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com to get all the information you need to book one of our dynamic speakers today. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking resource by apologist Trent Horn. That one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into, or back to, the practice of the Catholic faith. This Lent, plant seeds of faith in the hearts and minds of your non-Catholic friends and family. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today. You can order your copies of Why We're Catholic by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Can you trust the basis of the Christian faith? The Christian faith is under constant attack today in numerous ways, but the attack that does the most damage is the one that asks a deceptively simple question. What if your faith is based on a myth? The skeptics come with arguments to cast doubt in numerous ways, often attacking the reliability of the New Testament and the Gospels. And the sad news is that most people don't know how to answer these charges. The good news is that there are answers to each and every one of them. Good, solid answers. That's why Catholic Answers Studios has just released Jimmy Akin's new DVD, The Dawn of Christian History. With his characteristic wit and passion as a master storyteller, Jimmy takes you through an exciting detective story that reveals how history supports the Christian faith. Order your copy of The Dawn of Christian History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
888-318-7884, the number. We're talking about media and the faith. And if there's no good in media, if we can't find some way to make it work with the faith and maybe even work to the benefit of faith, well, we're in big trouble because it ain't going away and it ain't going to get smaller. It's becoming more and more ubiquitous. I think I may have mentioned this to you before when you were on, but it's still, and it's probably an old observation now, but it still impresses me every time I go to the gas pump and the TV starts playing. Like I get the, do you have that on your gas pumps there? Or is that just a California thing? Oh yeah, you got that. So you're not going to get away from it. So maybe we could for a moment just talk about the possibilities of social media in sharing the faith and in engendering the faith, building up the faith.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I want to stress is I'm not anti-technology. I'm talking to you on Skype on my computer. I'm using the wonders of the internet to be on a Catholic radio show. I teach online. I have a Facebook presence, a Twitter presence, and I have my smartphone at hand in case the connection drops so I can keep talking with you. Technology is a very, very useful tool. And there are great ministries, you know, yours ministry, Catholic Answers, you know, Word on Fire, lots and lots of great ministries using social media and the internet in general. I think we have to think about the fact that every technology is a tool. And just like your kitchen knife can cut you if you use it badly or carelessly, and just like you wouldn't let your toddler have the steak knives, so this media also has its dangers, has its difficulties, and needs to be used wisely. And I think part of the reason we're having problems with it is that people have adopted it so uncritically that they haven't thought that there could be any drawbacks.
Yeah.
And that doesn't help. But if we can think about, well, here's where it can go wrong, but here's where it can help us, then we can use this tool the way to benefit us. And I am convinced it can be a great tool for evangelization.
And I'm glad you mentioned Word on Fire, but I'm just particularly glad you mentioned them after you mentioned us. So that I appreciate that. But yeah, there are people. I mean, I'm thinking just off the top of my head of Matt Frad's blog, or I don't know, I can't remember the name of it. Pints with Aquinas. No, but is it called a blog or what do you call it? Podcast. Oh yeah. So people are podcasting wonderful things. All this great stuff is out there. It's in a sea of temptations and provocations and all that kind of thing, however. So how do we find the islands in the sea or, you know, that kind of thing?
I think there's two different things to think about here. And one is content and one is the way that we use it.
Okay.
Because there's a flood of really terrible content. There's a flood of really great content. And how to find the good content and avoid the bad is one thing. But that, in a sense, is not a new problem. That has always been the problem of trying to sort through the good and, you know, find the good and throw away the bad. We certainly have more of everything now. And the quantity of media that we're exposed to is a new thing. But the basic problem of discernment is kind of the same. What I think is a little bit different about social media and about the internet and technology in general is the way that it can reshape our lives, and especially the way that it can blur some of our boundaries. And one of the things I think that's particularly notable about technology, and probably one of the biggest problems, is that it's very easy to fill every waking moment with some sort of media.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Right, because we need silence, and certainly our faith life needs silence.
It does, because if we're always rushing around and doing stuff, and when we're not rushing around, we're listening to music, and we're not listening to music, we're checking Facebook and Twitter, and if every waking moment has some sort of distraction, we are going to be in a state of constant distraction, never able to really focus, never able to listen to God and sort of reflect. And I think that this really helps us understand part of the problem of apologetics and discipleship today. Why are people not responding when we share the faith? Well, I think one really basic part of the problem is that they don't have any time or space in their lives to think about it. Because we're asking people to really wrestle with deep, significant things. You know, is the Catholic Church the true church? Does God exist? Is Jesus the Savior? Is he present in the Eucharist? Let's see. Oh, look, somewhere in Afghanistan, someone has been blown up. Oh, look, there's a car crash in Vermont. Oh, there's a mudslide in California. Oh, my friend just texted me.
Yeah.
You know, it's all lost in a sea of distractions and interruptions, and there's no time to really think. And how can people change their lives if they never have the opportunity to think about why they should change their lives or what it will mean? No wonder people aren't responding.
I see the problem. I'm straining for the solution, but to hear this, how you address that, because that makes perfect sense. As a matter of fact, it strikes me that the more modern the modern world gets, the more overwhelmed everybody seems. It, yes. Like truly, people seem, when you go to the supermarket and just look at the faces of people there, people seem overwhelmed. And yes, how are they going to have a time or mind to think through their salvation or something like that?
And in a sense, it almost begins to feel cruel. Here's a person who's absolutely overwhelmed and struggling with anxiety, and you're going to give them one more thing to think about.
Right.
It's like it's so important. We need them to think about these things, but it's really difficult for someone who's just scraping by.
Yeah. So this brings me. I'm starting to see the connection here, and I think I was missing it before. When you talk about kind of aesthetics and apologetics, imagination and apologetics, your prescription, I'm going to guess from the title of your book, is that we should be making beautiful things, that we should be making beautiful stories, beautiful music, beautiful websites, but beautiful places where people can actually meet God.
Yes. And one of the characteristics of beauty is that it invites you to engage.
Ah.
It doesn't demand anything from you. It invites you. And so, for instance, if you walk into a beautiful church and God willing, you know, it's quiet in there, people aren't, you know, making a hubbub, and it's a genuinely beautiful church, there's a moment of encounter there where for whatever short span of time, you can simply be, and you can take it in at a level that probably isn't even conscious. And that's why I think things like silence in the context of the Mass is so important. People are starved for silence. So honestly, we don't have to have a hymn all the time. We can have 10 minutes of silence as people are receiving communion. Think of it as water in the desert. People might be uncomfortable with that moment of silence, but they need it. They need it like thirsty people need water. Because Where else in their lives do they have any time
to be
sit,
quiet.
To be quiet?
Mm-hmm.
Almost none.
And then we're not adding to people's burdens. What we're doing is inviting people to a kind of relief, a kind of,
Yes.
Let's take a quick call if you don't mind, Dr. Ordway, because I've been keeping people waiting while we talked. Let's go to Caitlin in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Caitlin, you are on with Dr. Holly Ordway. Your question, please.
Hi. Thank you for having me. My first question. Oh, actually, this is my only question. So on my Facebook, most of my friends are atheists, and a few of them are not very Catholic friendly and like to put like anti-Catholic posts. So I was sort of wondering, to have some tips, like, should I say something? Should I just avoid it? Or how do I handle it? I'm also a convert to the faith. I used to be atheist agnostic.
Okay, Caitlin, well, you are in good company with Dr. Holly Ordway. She wrote the book on atheists becoming Catholic. So literally, she wrote the book on it. Not God's Type is the name of the book. Dr. Ordway.
That's a great question, Caitlin. I'm really glad you asked, because this is the experience of a lot of people. I'm on Facebook. Oh, yes, I know exactly what you're talking about. And I think there are two things I want to say here. One is, in your personal witness, your own presentation is more significant than you might think. Now, by that, I don't mean that you need to be posting, you know, all these sorts of memes and Bible verses and quotes, things like that. That actually can be, frankly, a bit annoying and not necessarily a great witness. But to be able to share your faith in sort of natural ways of posting links or, hey, you know, I went to Mass and, you know, such and such, just sort of letting people know that you are a Catholic can be really helpful, because it allows people who see you there to associate, oh, Catholicism with, oh, this person that I like, this friend, wait, they are all a bunch of idiots. That simple moment of connection, I know for me as a convert, was really important to say, oh, well, maybe these Christians aren't all as stupid as I thought. Now, in terms of how much you engage, that's really depends on your personality. I tend to err on the side of less, because oftentimes these public debates generate more heat than light. I think sometimes it can be helpful to step in and say some sort of clarifying comments of, well, you know, we don't actually worship idols. You might not realize that, but we don't. Here's a link to something that you could read if you'd like to, and then leave it at that. Something like that.
And you can get all that stuff at Catholic.com. Go over there, Caitlin. Caitlin, we're really happy to have you call. Call again, please, sometime. We'd love to continue the conversation with you. We have to take a break. That's what the music means. But we're going to continue talking about faith and media with Dr. Holly Ordway right after this on Catholic Answers Live. Give us a call if you have a question, 888-318-7884, the number. We'll be right back.
Hang on. We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
It might be said that anti-Catholic notions of the Church's history are the original fake news. With all the misinformation being spread, where does one look for the truth? In The Real Story of Catholic History, Professor Steve Weidenkopf gives you the facts on over 50 of the most common misconceptions about Catholic history and shows how to answer them simply and powerfully. Whether it's to answer claims about Catholicism's supposedly pagan origins, old myths about the Inquisition that never seem to go away, or more modern errors that anti-Catholics put forth, The Real Story of Catholic History is an essential resource for every Catholic's bookshelf. Order your copy of The Real Story of Catholic History today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
As the legend goes, the Protestant Reformation began when Martin Luther nailed the list of his grievances with the Catholic Church to the door of All Saints Church in Wittenberg, Germany. But do you know the whole story? In Catholic Answers' brand new documentary, The Protestant Revolution, you will hear from top apologists Tim Staples, Jimmy Akin, Carla Broussard, Trent Horn, and Steve Weidenkopf as they expose the errors of Martin Luther and of the other so-called reformers. This DVD will give you a clearer understanding of our Protestant brothers and sisters, and you will be better equipped to engage them about what separates us and about what unites us. Order your copy of The Protestant Revolution today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting shop.catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Father Robert Spitzer.
First of all, you will get a much deeper awareness of your faith, much deeper awareness of the evidence for your faith, explanations of tough theological issues, how science and reason and faith come together, and above all, a deeper awareness of how to practice your faith and how to live it.
Father Spitzer's Universe with Father Robert Spitzer. Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're talking media and the life of faith. Is your media use, particularly your social media use, draining away that life of faith, or maybe your children's, or maybe our society's? And are there things that we can do to counter the effects of pervasive media? Our guest is Dr. Holly Ordway, professor of English and faculty member in the apologetics program at Houston Baptist Church, the author of Not God's Type, An Atheist Academic Lays Down Her Arm, and of Apologetics and the Christian Imagination, an integrated approach to defending the faith. And that's from Emmaus Road Publications, both very fine books. I will highly recommend Apologetics and the Christian Imagination to you. Dr. Ordway, every Lent, I kind of am ashamed to say that every Lent I give up the same thing. It's not the only thing. I do very many other heroic things. Maybe I don't. But I'm ashamed to say this because I have to do it every year. I stop watching television and movies. And the whole internet videos and all that stuff, unless I need an internet video to show me how to fix the plumbing or something, then I'll watch it. Cause that's how I learn to do everything, is by YouTube videos now. But that, as I get into the weeks of Lent, I feel it not as a terrible burden, but as a tremendous relief. And it becomes an opportunity to do things, to read things, to engage in conversations that I just would miss otherwise. And so and as I said, I'm ashamed to say it because I have to do it every year. That means that at some point after Lent, I'm going to be like, I got to watch this now. And then I'll be hooked again. And the media will have its hooks in me. I mentioned this because you were mentioning to me at the break, your idea of a media fast. And you talk about this with your students. Can you say something about fasting from media?
Right. I mean, I think this is a great time during Lent to talk about it, because the whole idea of a fast is that you're giving up something that's good or innocent in itself. You want to give up something, so it's a sacrifice. You know, you give up a certain type of food. It's why we give up meat, you know, on the Fridays in Lent. You know, meat is not sinful. We're voluntarily giving up something in obedience to the church so that we can learn that we can live without it. And I think it's the same thing with fasting from other things like media. Now, I watch television. I don't actually have broadcast television, but I watch DVDs, as we were saying in the break. I like the Great British Baking Show. You know, great fun. And so something like that is good in itself, or, you know, we're assuming it's, you know, good and innocent in itself. But we can get it can get our hooks into us. We can watch too much TV. We can be on the internet too much. I mean, I use Facebook, you know, as part of my ministry and, you know, as a way to connect with some of my friends. But there are times when I'm tired and stressed, I find myself checking Facebook because I'm tired and stressed. And I have to say to myself, is this really the right use of it? Or do I just need to turn my computer off, walk away, you know, go to bed early, read a book, something like that? So I think the idea of fasting can help us sort of discern where our boundaries are and how to use things and not let them use us. Now, there's an activity that I do with my students, and I've actually done this for years, probably more than 10 years, done it with my undergraduates, do it with my graduate students, and that's a 24-hour media fast. I have my students pick, you know, any day they want to do it. They need to go 24 hours with absolutely no media whatsoever, no television, no radio, no internet, no cell phone, no music, you know, no nothing. And it's honor system. So if they break the fast, they have to start it over again. And the really cool thing is that in more than 10 years of doing this with a huge range of students, range from 18 to 80, all different walks of life, everybody finds it really challenging, and everybody pretty much finds it really helpful and really eye-opening in terms of how much media can be taking over their lives.
Yeah.
And friends of my students, my Christian students in my Paul Dix program, reflecting on the way that taking away media, even though they think, oh, you know, I can handle this, this is no problem, it reveals maybe areas of anxiety, places where they're using it to cope with stress in not so healthy ways. Realizing places where it maybe substitutes for good relationships, but also on the positive side, helping them appreciate the ways that actually this media use could be a good thing. You know, a student who was texting with her granddaughter as a way of connecting. Well, that's great. You know, being aware of these things and doing that 24 hours of disconnecting can be really, really helpful to see the patterns that you have in your life and to say, okay, now the fast is over, am I going to make any changes? Am I going to keep on with this pattern? And there's also other forms of it. Like, for instance, for Lent, I often do some sort of curfew, which is say, okay, at 8 o'clock at night, no more screen time. And that's really helpful, too, because I have the tendency to, you know, be checking my email, you know, be checking Twitter, scrolling through it, what interesting articles have come up. You know what? 8 p.m., I'm done for the evening, you know, and that actually can be quite difficult. That can be a good Lenten discipline and a healthy one, because I say, well, these are good things. It's good that I have email and I connect with my friends on it. It's good that I can read interesting articles, but I need to disconnect. I need to take that break. So I think boundaries are really key, and that also forces us to make some choices. like I get a couple different Catholic e-newsletters in my inbox, you know, daily gospel readings, daily meditations. And those can be really helpful to start the day off well, take a moment with my morning coffee, read this thing. But I want to make sure that's not getting drowned out by 57 other things coming in. So doing some moments of focusing and thinking about prioritizing which media is helping me and which media is not helping me.
Yeah, that's it makes me think of St. Augustine, though, that I can, you know, I can fast by getting rid of everything, but moderation is the hardest thing. And it does seem like you're counseling some, but the fast, the one day fast gives a sense of where this might be a crutch, where, and, but maybe, you know, it also allows you to just like, oh, hey, the sun sets every afternoon. Like I can look at that. I had forgotten that, that kind of thing. Allow a little time to look up and see the world. It can't be good for us to be as disconnected from the natural world as we are. I mean, yeah, when you read the Bible, you see so many references to nature all around, and these are powerful references. And we're really cut off from nature. Like we don't know what temperature it is outside. We're, you know, in many places we go from the house to the car, from the car to work, from work to the car, to the store, to the car. And how much time, and I don't mean nature like getting out into, you know, Yosemite or something, although that's wonderful, but just being in contact with the light of the day. And what the breeze is doing and plants and animals and that kind of thing.
And seeing the, you know, the rhythm of God's creation, because, you know, with electric lights, you know, we can stay up any hours of the day and we can disrupt our normal rhythms. But God made the day and the night, and he made us to be creatures of that rhythm. And I think it's at our peril if we totally disconnect.
Indeed.
And one of the things I think is helpful too, if you do, you know, a 24-hour media fast and you start to recognize these patterns, I think one of the best things you can do from that is to start making your Sabbath day, make Sunday less media dense. Use Sunday as a day to unplug. Now, I'm a really big fan of having a proper Sabbath. I think that's really important. And we live in a workaholic culture. We have to push back against the pressure to make Sunday the day to catch up on everything.
Yeah.
And I always have a to-do list as long as your arm. And when I first started a few years ago to really have Sunday as a proper Sabbath, it was really stressful because I kept thinking, but I could work on this article, but I could catch up on my grading, but I could, but I could, but I could. And I thought, you know what? God said, take this day. Am I going to second guess God? And that's really been helpful to me to have this day where I really, as much as I can, genuinely try not to work and try not to be quite as plugged in.
Let's take a call. Let's go to Vincent in Houston, Texas, listening on Catholic.com. Vincent, thank you so much for your call. You are on with Dr. Holly Ordway. Your question, please.
Yes. So what I wanted to ask you about is that I had a conversation with a couple of folks about the bachelor and bachelorette, you know, this being media related. That are looking at shows like The Bachelor and Bachelorette, and some instances they agree with what's going on those.
Okay, Vincent, we have a really rough connection, so hang on and maybe if you're on speaker or something, take it off speaker. But I got enough of it so that I can convey that to Dr. Ordway. The Bachelor and Bachelorette, these shows that really it's reality TV, which has absolutely not a hint of reality about it. Of course it's, and they're, I don't know how to put it. Vulgar is not the word. Very, very, base. Is that the word? I don't know. I'm struggling for the word, but you get the general idea. Vincent's saying his argument with his friends is if you watch this, there's some degree to which you're agreeing to it, this kind of behavior. What do you say to that?
You know what? I'm going to have to agree with Vincent. And this is not to be a prude, because I think that it's possible to watch, a show that has occasional moments of vulgarity or contains scenes that you think, okay, I would prefer they didn't put that in there. You know, that sort of thing is different. Language maybe you wish that they would choose some different language in the show. But when you have a show whose whole premise is really not morally sound, then to watch that, I think, is problematic. Now, do I think it's a sin? I'm not going to go that far. I just think it's not necessarily healthy for us in terms of how we're nourishing ourselves. Because what we take in becomes part of us. You know, what we observe, what we're entertained by, shapes us. And if we think that's funny or fun or cool, you know, it's going to shape what we think is beautiful or what we see as beautiful. Yeah. And that kind of objectifying of men and women, I just don't think it's spiritually healthy.
Vincent, are you still there with us?
Yes. Can you hear me better now?
Yes, we can. Were you able to hear Dr. Ordway's answer?
Yes. And just to add on to that last point, what are your thoughts about, you know, teenagers, like people high school age looking at this type of stuff?
I think the younger you are, the more problematic it is, because you've got less sort of a context for assessing whether this is or is not okay. And so I think teenagers and younger, again, this is, I think, more of a problem, because you've got young people who are trying to form their ideas about what it means to be a man, what it means to be a woman, what does it mean to be in a relationship with other people, trying to take in all this data and say, how am I going to be a man or a woman interacting with other people? Well, if this is the kind of modeling that we get, what conclusions will they draw? Probably not the best conclusions that they could draw. Let me put it that way. So I don't think it's nutritious. Let me put it that way.
Yeah, indeed, not nutritious. Vincent, thanks very much for the call. Sorry it took a little while for it to become clear, but we do appreciate the call. We're talking media and the faith, and some of it's good news, some of it's not good news. But I think if we're going to be mature in our consumption of the media, we have to speak honestly and frankly about which parts are the good news and which parts are the bad news for us. And Dr. Holly Ordway is just the person to do that with. More after this. If you have a question for Dr. Ordway, 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. More Catholic Answers after this.
Join us on air today on Catholic Answers Live.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
We struggle with sin. We're distracted in prayer. We find it hard to be loving and easy to be selfish. Thankfully, the Church has given us Lent, the perfect time for reform, of reconversion to God and His will for us. The saints of the Counter-Reformation faced greater obstacles than these, yet they each found the grace to persevere during a tumultuous time in the Church. How can we do the same? Reform yourself is a good place to start. We all need to reform our souls. This Lent, let the saints who reformed the Church show you how. Order your copy of Reform Yourself today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
This year's Catholic Answers National Apologetics Conference is proud to announce our very special keynote speaker, Raymond Leo Cardinal Burke. Do you have your tickets? Early bird pricing ends July 2nd. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. 888-31-TRUTH, the number. We're talking media and the life of faith, a very important conversation we probably don't have enough of. But we, another thing we don't have enough of is Dr. Holly Ordway on this show. It's always great to have her on. And I just found out she's from Massachusetts. There's so many good things about you, Dr. Ordway. I did make a mistake earlier, I have been told. I said that you are a professor of English and a faculty member in the Apologetics Master's Program at Houston Baptist Church, apparently. And I didn't mean to say that. It's Houston Baptist University, of course. I don't know if they have a master's program in apologetics at any Baptist church. I don't think that's what churches do. So I apologize for that. But you are Catholic at a Baptist university, teaching at a Baptist university. And God is good, and the world is getting better when we are able to exchange our talents with one another in that way. We were talking when we went to the break a little bit about The Bachelor and The Bachelorette and nutrition. You used the metaphor of it's not nutritious. And there are some things that are not nutritious, but there's other things that will just rot your teeth. And I think there's more and more of those on television. I get the prescription, and I actually am kind of excited by this idea that you have that I think is not well said, mostly, that we have a duty to be making good options for people, good things that are beautiful and wholesome and nutritious and all that kind of thing. There's not enough Christian, sitcoms or 1 hour TV police procedurals, or, you know, we could do all those things. All the tools are there for us now. You don't need a network. You can just put it on the internet. And maybe more people should be doing that.
Yes. I can't say yes strongly enough. And I think, here's the thing. People need to be engaging their imagination. It's part of how God made us. And I talk about this in Apologetics and the Christian Imagination. It's like we need food. If we don't have nutritious food, we'll eat junk food. If we can't have a, well-balanced meal, we'll, eat Doritos. Because we have to eat something, so we need to make sure that we're making things available. And we need to make sure that we're identifying and clearly labeling poisons, because there are some things, like pornography, is a poison.
Right.
Absolutely clear on that. There's stuff that's like quasi, like not very good for you, not nutritious spiritually. Pornography is straight up poison. And if you're caught in it, please find resources to get out of it.
Yeah.
Because it's not something you can just say, I'm not going to look at it anymore, because it changes your brain. It rewires your brain. You need to get some assistance. So I encourage people to seek that out, get that poison out of your system.
Amen, sister. You're completely right on that. But I want to throw something out at you a little bit, because I think that, my wife always talks about trigger foods, like, oh, I can't have that. That's a trigger food. I'm just going to be like, for me, it would be like an Oreo cookie. I don't know what it would be, maybe a chocolate ice cream for my wife. Okay. But a lot of television is a trigger food in a way. If a person is like, for example, men, you will have to say how it is for women, but I know men, and we are wired to look at women and to leer at women in a way. And that's a lot what television is for a lot of men, that the show isn't even interesting if there's not, the hot babes. Is that still a thing? Can you still say hot babes? That's so 1980s. And that's a trigger food for many of us. And I know that that's the case. And like, even, here in San Diego, you don't need to watch the weather. You know what the weather's going to be. It's going to be 65 degrees and sunny in the winter, and it's going to be 75 degrees. But they have women doing the weather reports who are, I guess, Miss America or something. I don't know where they get these women. It's not subtle at all. There's no subtlety to it. And so,
yeah.
I do think there's some way in which even, just surfing around on the internet or watching, flipping through the channels, for a lot of people, that's a trigger, actually.
Yeah. And it's because it's just bringing in images of people who are being objectified. That's really the problem. When you have a scantily clad woman who's doing the weather, No, that's not pornography. I don't want to – we want to make sure we're clear on the definition.
Right.
Really, and I want to be clear too, there's nothing wrong with a man looking at a woman and saying, she's really good looking. Now, where his thoughts go from there could go in a bad direction, but the appreciation of female physical beauty, or the appreciation for a woman of male physical beauty. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, what becomes a problem is when television uses that and objectifies people. Why do we need a model giving the weather? Give a meteorologist, please. And I think with women, I think the triggers can be a little bit different. There can be this, you know, the physical body issues, but I think with us, it's often a question of identity, and you know, what are we wearing? The nice enough clothes? Are we thin enough?
Yeah,
you know, is a really big issue. So seeing, for instance, pictures of, like, I used to you know, sometimes read fashion magazines, you know, to look at, you know, outfits, and I like clothes. But even if you avoid the fashion magazines that have sex tips, good Lord, and you just look at the magazines that are only about fashion, only about clothes, eventually I realized that it was actually unhealthy for my self-image, because it was constantly cultivating a sense of dissatisfaction with my body image, my taste in clothes, you know, my level of thinness, and healthy.
I see what you're saying.
So here, coming back to what you said before about the need for Christians to create wholesome, you know, kind of wholesome media foods, I want to say this goes far beyond what most people think of when they think, oh, a Catholic TV show. They typically think, oh, a Christian movie means that the characters spout Bible verses to each other. That's a bad Christian movie.
Right.
What we need are police procedurals and baking shows and, you know, and
not baking shows. We do not. Okay, all right, I'll give you that.
and tractor shows and all those things where people are doing interesting things with good stories and good characters and they're reasonable, decent, wholesome people, and they're not taking their clothes off at every moment, and they're not all perfect size zero women with perfect makeup.
Right.
You know, that's the kind of stories we need, and that are promoting, you know, good values in a basic way. And they don't need to be explicitly outwardly Christian. And that's something that we kind of start at square zero here. We used to have these kinds of things. We don't so much anymore.
Yeah. Right. We have John in Boston, Mass. And since you and I are both from Massachusetts, let's go to John in Boston, Massachusetts. John, your question for Dr. Holly Ordway.
Yes, hi. I was wondering if there was a point in time where it all sort of went south. And do you feel that more conservative views are coming back into play as far as media is concerned?
Usually people say it all went south when Fonzie jumped over the shark, but do you have a better answer than that?
Yeah, I think we've seen no particular turning point moments, but a gradual kind of snowball effect.
Yeah.
Because, again, people have not been considering the implications of the technology that they use. All technology has consequences, and we haven't thought about that. And as for whether I think there's a moment of change or becoming more conservative, I would say the answer is no. Absolutely no. It's just getting worse. And I think we have currently kind of a culture war attitude where people on one side are, you know, saying the other side's views and approach are just the worst ever, you know, both ways. And so actually even our news, even our political discourse is becoming toxic, not to mention all the rest of our media. So we have some issues there as well. And I think with news, even though it might seem, very serious and, you know, good to be listening to the news, if we're constantly getting, you know, notifications on our phone, by the way, notifications on phones are from the devil. Turn them off. Don't get push notifications on your phones. You do one thing from this show, turn off push notifications.
Wow. I wish I knew how to run my phone. I would do that if I knew how to operate my phone. But
you're trying to text with your daughter, you know, about school or something, and you get a notification that, you know, someone's murdered here, you know, violence is up there, catastrophe here, catastrophe there, so and so is having an affair, and this other person's been arrested for corruption. It really fosters a negative attitude overall.
Yeah. Thanks very much for that call from Boston. Very happy to hear from you. Dr. Holly Ordway, thank you so much for spending the hour with us. I always feel at the end of the hour that there's got to be some way that we can have you on more. But I know we got you scheduled coming back. Yep. So the things that I'm taking away are, there is the poisonous stuff. You just got to stay away from the poisonous stuff. But even the good stuff, you've got to remember, you need silence in your life. You need some peace, and your children do as well.
Yes.
Dr. Holly Ordway, I mentioned the book before. I highly recommend it, Apologetics and the Christian Imagination. Tomorrow, 2 hours of open forum with Jimmy Akin here, both hours. But it's going to be open forum with a twist. Hope you'll join us then. We will see you then, God willing, on Catholic Answers Live.